I'm an intellectual. I'm an intellectual. I'm an intellectual. Hey y'all, it's your boy Kem, and I'm super excited about today's guest. He hails from the island of St. Thomas in the United States Virgin Islands. He worked his way from 32 square miles to being on top of the reggae charts. If you don't know who I'm talking about as yet, it's the man, the myth, the legend, Pressure Bus Pipe. I hope y'all enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Peace. All right, cool. Sounding clear on my end. Welcome, man. I would like to tell everybody that today we have the legendary Mr. Pressure Bus Pipe with us, hailing all the way from the Virgin Islands. As we know, he has been on top of the reggae charts. He has been an entrepreneur. He's a father, role model, an ambassador for the United States Virgin Islands. And we are glad that he has taken the time out today to be able to even stop by with us. How you doing, bro? How the family doing? How you been staying safe in these corona times, man?
Yeah, everything been going good, just been making music.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And just using the time wisely to, you know, educate myself and a lot of stuff too. You know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been doing that, being on the road so much or whatever, you know what I mean? So
Right. So basically staying still and being able to sit down actually help put some different stuff in perspective and help you take some different angles in attacking the music.
Yes.
Okay. Even with a segue, I saw that you were performing live on the the Virtual Village the other night, and I was just thinking in my head, man, who would have thought, you know, that we would be performing virtually right now instead of being on a literal stage? How did that feel to you?
You know, it's different, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just put myself on a vibes, like, you know, you're performing on a TV station.
Right. Controlled environment, no audience inside there per se to get the energy.
Exactly. Yep.
Got you. So you're from St. Thomas, bro. Let's go to the genesis of it all. Because here at the Flying Intellectual Podcast, I really like to tell people stories from the start and show how they really got to where they are today. So, you know, we all are a product of our environment. We all are who we are from what we've been through and where we're from. So talk a little bit about growing up in St. Thomas and how that influenced who you became, which is Pressure Bus Pipe.
Well, I mean, from a very young age, you know, I come up under my father's shadow.
Uh-huh.
My father is Orvin Brownlee Brown, the late Orvin Brownlee Brown.
Yes, sir. Rest in peace to the legend.
Yeah, so I, as a very young age, you know, I always felt privileged to be amongst him and to be amongst other greats. You know, and not knowing where that would take me, because as a boy, you know, we want to play sports, we want to do this and do, you know, and
yeah,
just my father had that glow about him that as a musician, that I always used to want to go with him. I wanted to learn what he doing. I wanted to be just like him, basically.
Right.
But of course, you know, growing up in the ghetto, it was.
Yeah.
The reality of the situation is that I have to be a cut above the rest. I have to really be, you know, focused and what it is I need to accomplish. So, you know, as a youth, you know, you get yourself into trouble, you know. But at that time in life now, you know everybody, you know.
Yeah, especially in that 32 square miles, right? You really can't go too far without knowing Brownlee's son.
Especially in my community, I mean,
yeah,
everybody knew who I was, so I couldn't,
right?
You know, I would get school before my mother even find out what going.
Right. So it takes a village, and the village gonna deal with you first.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's a good segue, not to cut you off, but just as influential as your dad was, I know your mom was just as influential.
Yeah, man, she was very, very influential, because when my father was out on the road being his self, you know, and doing everything for the community, my mother is who was instilling all those morals into me. And, you know, me and her went through it, you know.
Yeah.
Me and her really went through all of it, and she built me to be the man that I is, really, you know. And my father played his part by giving me the vision and providing for me in a way that, you know, that I would be able to provide for myself in years. I mean,
yeah,
so much that he taught me as a father should pass on the knowledge that they have unto their youths.
Yeah.
So I always just take everything in with stride, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And of course, your father being that big of a deal, your mom being that influential, I know, you know, you were doing your best to just navigate. Now, how early did you really, now, of course, your dad was a musician. So how, I remember talking to you one time, you were telling me like pressure the artist wasn't something that you envisioned. You actually wanted to be a drummer.
Yeah.
Or you not actually wanted to be, you were a drummer, but you wanted to be a professional drummer on that level.
Yeah, man. Because my father was a drummer, and drummer was the ultimate thing. Like, if you use the drummer and use the one that making the rhythm and making everybody in
move and groove
and something, like,
yeah.
I want to be that person.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just that for me, and I, reggae music was a thing that I love, and I always would be listening to it in my bedroom, and you know, and when I go out into the ghetto and thing, is like, you know, everybody playing reggae music, and you know, of course, the jam band, and you know,
yeah.
But for me, I was more leaning on the reggae. That was more interesting to me. Like, yeah, I like this culture.
Okay.
Different.
And I didn't even think about that. I never even really think about how did you even, like out of all this stuff, because, you know, from the Virgin Islands, Calypso is the big thing, the Quell Bay and that type of music.
Yeah.
So for you to really, of course, if you're playing drums, then there is way more of those type of bands than there are reggae bands back home. So you are more internalizing that type of music.
Yeah.
But I never even thought to myself, how did Pressure even get, how did he even choose this lane? So that was even interesting for you to just say.
Yeah, man. You know, in the ghettos at that time too, it was a lot of reggae music playing, a lot of Rastaman, you know, in the no, it was just a place where it had so much vibes. You know? And of course, it was either reggae music or you're listening to jam band.
Right.
I mean, so it was either or, and I had loved jam band, I had loved reggae music. I was just all for it, everything, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
it's just that I felt like Calypso music at the time for me was like, okay, this is my culture. I already love it. This is me. I like that reggae culture. I want that. You know what I mean? I want to. And then, you know, the music is good. It feels good to the soul. Like, why?
Yeah.
For me, it's like, you know, Calypso music was doing something else for me. But it wasn't doing what reggae music was doing for me. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it was a balance. You
know? Right. So you were getting the soul music for you. What were really resonating with you was the reggae music. And you were really, you know, you used the calypso as your culture, and you were submersed in that naturally. But the reggae music were really touching your soul, and you were resonating with that more.
Because of the message, you know, and put really into Black history and where we coming from and where we going as a people.
Right.
Me, just in my own searching and thing, I felt closer to reggae music because it was a way for me, and I see a way for others to express themselves.
Yeah. You
know what I mean? It was a music that, yeah, people love it, you know, but nobody don't really uphold the Rastaman. It's something.
Yeah.
A man that, you know, how the Rastaman putting out all his good music and healing the world, but yet still the elders them fighting against Rastaman. Like, what Rastaman doing so bad?
Wow.
Just the natty dread? Is it just the bongo dread them or a twist?
Yeah.
Nice. Is it just, what is it?
Yeah.
That is not, you know what I mean? So it was always interesting to me.
Yeah. Wow. So the dichotomy of, like, you know, the ability to see through the fact that Rastaman kind of had this negative stigma to it, you know, like, yeah, like, I, even growing up, you know, but like, you would hear certain, go ahead.
It wasn't like that, you know, in the Rastaman them, or the man them who we look up to.
Yeah, yeah, that had the message that was
You
really
know,
reasoning with the youth then.
a pot bubbling and he
Yeah.
could come and get a bowl out of the pot. Who it is bubbling the pot? The Rasta man.
The Rasta
You
man,
know,
yeah.
and when you're feeding, you don't ain't have nothing to do with the money, you know. Just you're feeding people, you know. You know what?
Yeah.
Who are you when you're feeding a nation of people and helping them to live to see another day? You are of God. So I like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You know, I like that. And I see it happening from the heart, from that is not backed by a congregation or a church, or they don't get no tidings or nothing like that. It's just
Yeah. Yeah.
bubble a pot and 20 people get a bowl and everybody irie.
Yeah. Feeding people literally and spiritually as well.
So what I was hearing about the Rasta man, I was seeing totally different. You know what I
Yeah.
mean?
Wow. And that's such a contradiction in itself, but it's a beautiful contradiction because you literally the you wanted to know what made it so bad and you found out that it was so good for you.
Yes, you know.
Respect. So I remember talking to you one time and we were reasoning and you had said your mom actually ended up sending you to the States, right? I think it was like your high school, a couple of years of your high school years, because she wanted to kind of really get you out of the environment that had kind of taken a turn for the word the ghetto being the ghetto. She saw that the streets was trying to take her young son and she wanted to get him out of there. Talk a little bit about how moving to the States during that time, I think you even said that uncle was like one of the strictest people you ever know.
Yeah, fuck.
Talk to me.
Take that, you know. I was in high school. It was Charlotte Amalie. I was in 11th grade, and I was just getting myself into too much things, man, at that young age. You know, adolescence kicking, and and where I come from is like, we ain't taking no talk, you know. It's just every week it was always something with me and somebody and getting into jumping into fights that nobody in trouble me, but I see man my bridging in a fight and I always ending up in a fight because somebody do my bridging something and because I is the one that everybody know I have people in the office. I the man them who really start the fight gone home, you know.
Well, you in the office
Yeah,
with
I in the office every time with the
it.
principal, you know. So to be honest with you, I've been suspended many times from high school. You know, many times, and I've been saved many times because of, my mother and my father, and they would practically beg for me, and because of who they is, there was some mercy. And and to the point of even threatening to expel me from school. Point upon my mother was like, listen, you got to leave this island. Like, where you going, I can't afford for you to go down that road. That you have to leave this island and you have to change, you have to do something with yourself. And and I take that same mentality that I leave with in St. Thomas, straight to Atlanta, straight to Valdosta, Georgia, to by my uncle, Now, this is an uncle that is my favorite uncle in the whole wide world, you know.
Crazy.
And from a little youth, my uncle, I look up to my uncle because he was one of the most talked about basketball players in St. Thomas. Played for half a season with Atlanta Hawks way back in the days, you know what I mean? You know, he's somebody that I really look up to. So when he would come to the visit St. Thomas when we were youth, he always used to bring stuff for us. So as a youth, yeah, that's my
Yeah, that's like you don't attach yourself to that because that's my favorite
favorite
uncle. He's
uncle,
bringing
you
things
know.
for me. Yeah.
So my mother gave me the idea. So my idea of my uncle is always the pleasant vibe
The
when he
nice
visit and
giving get.
always put the love and he glad to see us and he taking us with him to the beach and it's a lovely vibe. You know what I mean? So my idea when my mother say like, listen, you want to go live with your uncle and go school up there? I was like, yeah, man. Yeah, man. My mother was like, yes, all right. You know, at the same That year I lived with in high school. I went up there to Valdosta High School with it, up to Valdosta where my uncle him with it. And my uncle him cut me short with it one time. One time. You know what I mean? He laid down the rules to me and leave me to know, like, listen, you know, that what you're doing in St. Thomas, that smoking weed and all of that, daddy gonna cut out now.
Now.
You understand?
Yeah.
I violate, you check?
Yeah.
And you know, I went out with some friends during high school in Valdosta because I try and prove to them, you know, I's the only man in the school who is from the Caribbean, so I...
Yeah, so it come with a level of clout.
Popular already in the school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I tell them about Rastafari and music and all kind of thing, and they really know too much about these things, you know?
Yeah, but they're hearing that accent, and that's
so
how they cool.
But they're asking me about if we just smoke a lot of ganja and things. So
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, how you mean? Yeah.
How you mean?
Me and my friends leave after high school, go do our thing, and you know, my uncle come pick me up and smell it on me, and it was a problem. But, you know, so from then, he take me out of all the musical activities. I would just bag up, basically, ground.
Yeah.
Couldn't go to music class because he gave me that allowance. When I first went to I was in a band class, you know, because I was already in band in St. Thomas, Charlotte.
Yeah.
So he...
Marching band
thing,
and so,
you know,
yeah.
I was in band music. You know, the teacher had done like me because, like, I already had skills.
Mm-hmm. And not to cut you out, but for the people listening, Charlotte O'Malley, I tell people all the time, when I moved to St. Thomas and went to UVI and stuff, and we were going around to the different high school, you recognize that the Charlotte O'Malley High School has one of the best, if not the best, music program in the Virgin Islands, maybe the Caribbean. You recognize that they're teaching these kids at a very early age, you know, the high level of music theory and stuff, and these kids coming out of high school. And really, when we was in college, people coming, literally, they still in school at Charlotte O'Malley and coming and meeting us in jazz band that night, and them are playing at our level, if not higher.
Yeah.
So, like, that level. So when you went to Valdosta, you really were already on a level because Charlotte O'Malley is one of the best. But go ahead, not to cut you
off.
Yeah,
man. So,
yeah.
So he took me out of all the musical activities, and I basically couldn't do nothing. It was just academics.
Crazy.
Straight academics. And I taught him all like done. Like on 7 months, I still can't. Even the grades starting to come back up. And my grades started to come back up. I really didn't want to be in band anymore. I by that time was writing lyrics. I was like, yo, okay, you go take the trumpet from me, the drumsticks, you go do all of that. You can't take my voice from me. You know what I mean? So I write lyrics. You know, and I would share my lyrics with my uncle and he would like it. Like my thing, he tell me, keep doing my thing. You know what I mean? Still in.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't all bad. You know what I mean?
Right. Positive reinforcement in the tough love.
Now that I is a big man, of course, I could see where that at that time I needed that discipline.
Right. You know? That discipline and that structure.
That discipline
right.
and that family structure. I mean, my mother could have done it for me. My father could have done it for me. But, you know, I mean, I was unruly to the point that I needed somebody else to talk to me. You know,
yeah.
I really needed to get off the island because my mother is like, she couldn't beat me no more. It was beyond just beating me now. You know what I mean? Getting too old to be getting beat. You check what I'm saying? So, so
yeah.
I started to do my thing and, one time I had this little rap contest in not rap contest, but you know, like lunch,
like a talent show,
little rap battle going on in
lunchtime,
you know, during high school in Valdosta, and you know, I jump in the little rap battle and I sing a Sean Paul, you know, nobody don't know this, nobody don't know Sean Paul because they don't listen to reggae music at
they're listening
to like Pastor Troy and.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Silk the Shaka and Mark.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what really bumping at the time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I sing a Sean Paul and they went crazy. Absolutely went crazy. Like, yo. So now everybody's starting to gather around to hear me sing and do my ain't nobody in the whole high school sung like me. I As a matter of fact, they never came in touch with somebody with an accent. That's
Wow.
how popular I was. So I would be all over this. People would be like, talk for me, say something for me, say something.
Some say something in your
It's
accent.
class, always reading. You know what I mean? Like they had me like and in front. I mean, but so now I feel like I have challenged, man. These people here, they like me. They thinking that song was mine. Why guys writing song, man? A good thing because I can't let them down. I can't let my friends them down who I go in school with. You know, so I used to go home and start writing my lyrics, and you know, them man would be inviting me to their little studio. Them man get a little mixing board in their bedroom and thing down in the hood, and I'll be asking my uncle like, "Yo, uncle, you know, I want to go down and do some little recording," and my uncle be like, "Nope, not done." Hey, you start going down there, you're gonna start smoking. No, me dropping you down there to go do no work. Well, he was really strict, but he did free up one time. One time, he allowed me to. He dropped me off and he tell me he gonna be back for me in 1 hour, and he better be
Specific
ready when he come.
when you come back.
You understand? I had a CD. I communicate with and hand he that. You know what I mean?
Evidence of the
Yeah,
works.
my first song I had on record, I put it in his thing and we went drive home and played, and he was like, it's sound good. It's sound good. You know? It's sound good. You
Sound
know?
good,
Ain't sound bad, you know? Yeah. You know what I mean?
that type
Yeah,
of
but
thing.
then it just come a time with probably like, you know, before even graduation in Valdosta, it was like in December, Christmas time, I just begged my mother to bring me back home. Mommy, I ready, I change, I's a different, no, boy, I holding it. And she like, yeah, you know, she could have tell, you know what I mean? And she just bring me back home to finish to graduate from Charlotte Amalie. So the last half of 12th grade, you know, I spent in Charlotte Amalie. You know, and when I came back home to the Virgin, when I come back, I link up with Rafi Jaciano. He was still in high school too, and you know, me and Rafi start doing some talent shows together. We do like Star Fest, you know. We be chanting in high school, doing our little thing in the school, and you know what I mean. One time Rafi is like, "Listen, we need to go Idora Ken, man. We need to go out there and see. We hearing to get some bad chanters out there in Idora Ken, man." And me and Rafi gone out there one day like after school, and then I had a chant out over there in Idora Ken, and we went and bust up the place in Idora Ken, and next we link up with some of them chanters out there, and next thing you know, we start getting them man to come tongue Charlotte Amalie and doing a thing down there, and then we all start linking up because it was never like we warring against them or nothing. You understand? Like love. Then we end up linking so much. You know what I mean? We end up form a group called Starlion Family. You know?
This is going back now.
Yeah.
Okay. I even know that's how it started. That's crazy.
So yeah, we start from right before graduation. Starlion Family was formed. Couple of the members them had graduate a year before me, like Nayora and Icarus and so. But me and Rafi and Kimby and Jagan, you know, Cyrus, all of us were still in school. Yeah.
Nice.
And we formed that
Nice.
group. Then now we our first show we opened up for was Sizzla. You know, Sizzla, I think that was in the year 2000. We open up for Sizzla, and from there we start to get a lot of recognition on the island. Like people were talking about the Starlion family throughout the island. You know, everybody was like, you know, we were just the talk, you know. So now every show are coming to the VI as far as St. Thomas, you know, like we will be the opening act.
opening act for that, yeah.
And then one time we get a chance to go to St. Croix for the island, for the at Island Center. For the Saji, I think Saji, they might keep at a local show, local fest or whatever. And yeah, that they were big, and we get to expose ourselves in St. Croix to one, you know, that really had light a fire, you know.
Yeah, now the big island know now what's going on in Rock.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So then when we went to St. Croix, that's when I first meet with Dean Pan.
Okay, yeah.
When Star Lion family had went over there, and you know, Dean had expressed to me that, you know, he really loved the group, he loved Star Lion family, and he loved the way I sound, and you know, he would really like to do some work with me, you know what I mean? So, you know, of course, I working with the family, so I was like, okay, we're going to link, you know? Work. I really want to do work with Dean at the time, but, you know, as I was kind of uncertain as to like, should I do something by myself?
Right, right. Of course, you with a group, you didn't want to be like the Beyonce. You were scared of,
Man, it's a whole group I with. I don't want to just do, you know? I was kind of unsure about it, but I was leaving Dean, you know, like, yeah, we're going to keep connect, man. Don't worry about it, but you know, just give me some time to figure that out, you know?
Right.
And it just, one day it hit me like, you know, like, no, man, this is, I gotta go fulfill this, man. I get too much fire in me to really wait and six other man to get their thing together like this. Like, you know, it all just hit me one day like, yo, six of us, seven of us, you know, as artists, none of us ain't playing no instruments, like, who is going to book us to, you know, you got us, and then we want to have a band. Like, that's too much going on. Like, yeah, a group, we is going to always be brothers, but right now, I got to make a decision for myself and for my future.
And that's tough in itself because, you know, it's hard when you have to make that decision because you can be looked at as selfish. You could be looked at as, like, you're looking out for your own interests, but we all have to know that, you know, and our journeys are different, you know what I'm saying? You came up with Starlight and that was what got you on the map, you know what I'm saying? You're grateful for that, but you couldn't, you know, Ja had bigger plans and you had to make sure that you fulfill your role.
But the good part about it, which Ja was working in all of our favor, is that I did hold a meeting to talk about it, you know, and everybody was willing to go on their own and do their thing. It's like everybody was feeling that kind of way. And decided and just feel like, wow, my son, pressure. Like, I glad you mentioned that, man. I've been feeling in a way too. And you know what I mean? I didn't want to really mash nobody's toes and really a breath of fresh air for me to know, like, I would have had the support. And I get the support from everybody and I give them my support in whatever they get going on, of course. You know what I mean? Ayora, you know, he went and started doing his solo work. I just started doing his solo work. Icarus, rest in peace to Cyrus. He was doing his solo work. You know, Jagan started doing his thing. You know, everybody just started to, you know, start to forward. But, you know, you know, I just started to really, like, make sacrifices. You know, not saying that the others ain't do what they had to do, but
right, but you know, you could speak for yourself.
I know the sacrifices that I had to make to really push forward, you know.
Now, that's a great segue. Not to cut you off, let's segue right there because that's one of my questions. And it really, literally, I had next to it sacrifice and humility. So there was a post that you posted a couple months ago as it applied to working in a deli in St. John, where you had to make a sacrifice just to do what you had to do so that you could afford to do what you wanted to do, which was the music eventually. Talk a little bit about that story for those who didn't know and explain. And that, I think that would be a great segue to why one of the things you had to sacrifice and had to do to make it as Pressure the Artist.
Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, you know, you have to be real with your situation. And for me, I had the support of my mother, you know. My mother was my biggest support system when I really needed that financial support, especially to push forward and do music. You know, I didn't, my mother wasn't rich, you know, but my mother had believed in me, and that's all I needed, you know.
Yeah, that's worth more than
She
any
had
dollar.
believed in me. She felt like, listen, I know you have what it takes to go out there and make a name for yourself. You know what I mean? So in return, she wouldn't be like, oh, you need to go and get a job. No, you need to, you know what I mean? She would be like, when you're going in the studio, where's the next song? When is it coming out of the next song? This is the encouragement. She'd be like, you know, she always want to hear what I have coming with next. And she just a part of my life and always been a part of my life and helping me to grow, to be an artist too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In when I first left with Starlight and Family, I started to work with Dean Pan. Me and Dean Pan, we released my first album, The Pressure Is On. The Pressure Is On. Got a lot of great reviews throughout the internet and stuff. I was, you know what I mean? A lot of people was loving the music, really into the music and stuff like that. I was getting shows throughout the VI, of course, but I was getting shows. Like, I would come to Atlanta. I would have a show in New York. But they were little opening acts, but they had mean so much to me because I know where I was coming from.
Coming from, yeah,
there wasn't
that's
no
right.
money involved, but I had a crowd in front of me to improve. So, okay, that's all I needed. I needed a shot to just get me in front of some people. You know what I mean? And let my thing, you know? And so during that time, it was financially rough for me, so I had to go and look a job. You know, I trying to do the music, but, you know, I need to go and I need to work. You know, I just had my son. Now it's 2003. I work, you know what I mean? So I touch in every place and he ain't gonna work for me. And the kind of jobs were available, I don't really want to work for them. And then next year, you know, I have to suck salt and end up going to work in a supermarket.
Yeah,
and then I start out as a cashier. Mine, you know, is pressure, you know.
Yeah, done pressure already. Done for the album. You know what I'm saying? You done thing taking off, but you're still local in your local neighborhood.
They still it's like everybody seeing me, and it's like, yo, you ain't pressure, no man. We like your music, man. A song you get, no limitation. Zion is, you know what I mean? But no, cashier, no, I was bagging. Only job available. The manager tell me, she said, just start out there. In a month, we'll move you to someplace else. But that's all we have for now. Just get your door and come and work, right? So start off bargain. Next thing you know, I was a cashier. I went from bargain to being a cashier. Then being a cashier to moving in a back by the deli. And the reason why I went in a deli, right, is because all the rest of them were in a deli. that man was serving whatever you check, making sandwich, serving the food, you know, cutting the cold cuts, them, whatever it is that, like, we ain't eating none of these things, but this is that.
Yeah, you gotta touch the meat.
Up there by the cashier, it ain't no fun up there, man. I wanna go back. So I asked the manager to put me in the back, man. You know, like after he put me in the back, and that's where I was, you know. But I would be in the back singing. People would be coming in trying to, you know, they're buying food, and I just in the back singing music, serving food to people. So people delighted by that, you know what I mean? I would be like, yo, pressure, your song good. Yeah, I like how we sound. And I would always get compliments singing. And me doing it like I look in no compliment.
Right. You're just doing it from the heart. And that's, you just, you know, that's how we pop.
Energy and fire in me right now. Let me just sing my song them. And my brethren them in the deli, we like them and like it.
Yeah. So you're entertaining them. They're your life crowd. Yeah.
And then, you know, a time had come and, you know, another job was presented to me, opportunity was presented to me to go and work for Department of Licensing and Consumer Affairs, which was, you know, a step up again in
yeah, market for sure.
To sitting at a desk now and having a badge and, You know, having a vehicle and going out on the field and going to inspect stores and gas stations. You know what I mean? That was up for me. So, you know, I went and I started to do that, you know, and it was great. You know, at that time now, you know, I'm more able to take care of my family, my woman, and you know what I mean, and help out with my mother wherever I could, you know. And so I was more in a comfortable spot right there. It's like everything was just going good for me, you know. The music, I was, everything was going good as is, but in my mind, life isn't the way I want it to be right now. I mean,
Because you
I
want to be the
want to
artist.
do music, like, can't be my life. I can't be, this ain't where probably gonna be for the rest, for the next 30 years, to then say I retired from the government being a licensing and consumer officer. This is not gonna be my life, you know. And opportunity arise for me to just leave the island and just try something new, you know. It was like a leap of faith, you know. I talked to my mother about it. I talked to everybody about it basically because I was leaving. It's something that I really wanted to do, just leave the island and try something else, you know. I can remember is like everybody, they were, it was like bittersweet, you know what I mean? Because you know how it is, like when you have big dreams, but everybody that think like your dream's too big.
Too big, intimidating for them, so they can't believe. So it's almost like you on the island and by
You know what I
yourself
mean?
with this
It's like
idea.
telling them, like, listen, nah, I try and be the biggest thing come out of the Virgin Islands. And I try, this is my mentality, you know, like, nah, I going to go out there and I going to do what I have to do and I going to make the VI proud. I mean, everybody will be like, yeah, my boy, but you got a good job, though. Imagine a job where you have, you know, people want a job where you have, my boy. The man, you safe, you ain't get nothing. The man, you have your own vehicle, government vehicle. You could do what you, the man, you go, the man, and used to be. And my mother would just be like, well, if that's what you want to do, then go do it. But do it. I want
Right.
that.
Go hard.
I don't want to see you doing nothing else but that. Don't want to hear that you getting yourself into problems, you this and you that, and you ain't doing music. You know what I mean? And I really, if little did my mother know that I definitely were going to do this music. Like, ain't nothing was going to stop me from doing this music, you know. And so I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and then I moved to Atlanta, Georgia for like 3 months. This is in the year 2005. 2005.
So pressure, I mean, love and affection ain't even blow up yet. I think that's a
Make
oh
it.
seven, right? Okay, let me make it. Yeah, that's still, so you still in the
Yeah,
early
man. Yeah,
stages
man.
of bus pipe.
Actually, make it.
Okay.
And so I moved to Atlanta for like 4 to 6 months. You know, and then had moved back down to Valdosta, Georgia, to stay with my sister, because my sister had then moved up there to go to college, and you know, she had her own place in Valdosta, and I was more comfortable there. So I just went down and stayed with my sister, and you know, again, my sister is another, you know, driving force behind me too. She was a support for me, even though, you know, she would be like, yo, I think you need to go look at job now, you know.
Just because
But she still would encourage me to do music, and you know, she never leave me fall flat. You know, she was there with me, there for me through everything, just like my mother, you know, in them trying times. You know what I mean? So I would just keep doing my thing in Valdosta at the time. Now, you know, I get a little studio down there and I work and do my things I could do. I'll make my little trips back and forth from Valdosta to Atlanta, back port. Then next thing you know what I mean, things starting to get rough. You know what I mean? Now I want to go sell herb and make a little connection in Atlanta and Try to see if I could get some herb down to Valdosta. So now I gone to Atlanta. You know what I mean? Grab what it is I could have grabbed on my way back to Valdosta. Get pulled over from the police. You know what I mean? Police
Crazy.
find pounds of weed in a car with me. And, you know, I end up spend a weekend. Spend about a Thursday to a Monday in prison for the first 2 days, 3 days. Nobody didn't know where I was. And it
Man.
was kind of like, it was like, nah, my life over. I mean, no, my life over. Every mother, everybody tell me not to do, I just do, and it happened to me. You know, like my whole world was just like messed right up. You know what I mean? And it's like I would beat up on myself, like how I could do that. You know, because I wilding, you know what I mean? I got
And you feel like you're laying down the people who
in
believe in
a
you the
young,
most.
you know what I mean? Wilding like how I was in St. Thomas, you know what I mean? Just got down, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, how we don't move in St. Thomas, it can't probably even better up here, man. No money, you know?
That's crazy. So I didn't even know that story there. So your whole journey to becoming, you know, to becoming who you became and who you are now is a lot of twists and turns. And, you know, that's what I'd be trying to explain to the youth, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's journeys look different. You know what I'm saying? We all have our own plan, you know, set out for us, but it's really on us to really find, you know, it within ourselves and to put fear aside. Because I know a lot of what I'm listening to, you know, even you believed, and I think that's a very important part to it. You believed in yourself that much that, okay, no matter even if your friends and them didn't really see the vision, you saw your vision and you stuck to the plan. And even if you had these bumps in, you know, bumps in the road and whatnot, you always gonna have bumps in the road. But the fact that you had this vision and you stuck with it and you became who you became, it, you know, is a testament to you. First of all, your support group, because, you know, you've said your mother so many times, you said your sister, you said your dad, you know what I'm saying? Like, all of these people in your life was there for a reason and really helped and shape, you know, Delano, you know, overall, who then became Pressure, you know what I'm saying? And Pressure never changed who Delano was. And that's a beautiful thing, because you had that great, that great foundation. Let's talk about, this whole time you're evolving into Bus Pipe, and then you, let's say now, though, when would you say that you really became, when was that moment where, okay, I really doing this thing? Your first real check mark in your own personal checklist of becoming Bus Pipe. When would you say that was?
Well, that was in 2005, after getting into that incident. You know, I just get a call out of the blue from Dean Pan. He just gave the CD, gave my album to Dan Carlyan, and Dan Carlyan love it, and, you know, he wants to reach out to you and work with you and stuff like that. So at that moment, it was done already, an exciting moment. Wasn't that exciting, and like when he actually called me, you know what I mean? It was like, yo, this is Dan, like Dan Carlyan, you mean like the real Dan Carlyan.
The real Dan Carlyan.
You know, the Pandy River, Pandy Bank, this is producer Dan Carlyan.
Yep.
I mean, he just laughed, and, you know, at that moment there, I know it was going to be something special. So, you know, he said he wanted to work with me, he sent me some rhythms. You know, Love and Affection was the first song that I recorded for Dan.
Wow. The first song, dog. You hit a home run out. You hit a home run at your first
song
at bat. That's crazy.
Recorded, period.
Wow.
Released. And it was history ever since.
Wow. And that, and it was, and Love and Affection Blue.
Yeah,
like
Love and Affection Blue, like 07 is the official year that it really take off. It really 06.
Okay.
But 07, I think, is when the song really blossomed and became what it is. You know what I mean? Yeah, and I just went from, you could imagine, my whole life just drastically changed. Like
Wow.
within weeks, you know what I mean? And from between when the
Yeah.
song released and to when my first show, which was in Freeport, Bahamas, like it no
Okay.
it was a testament, like, wow, I can't believe that people actually going crazy for me right now. But last month, they didn't know who I was. I was a struggling artist. So it's just life, and you just gotta keep being persistent, and you know, and
Yeah. And I go after that goal with vengeance, man. Sheesh, that's crazy. I didn't even, man, it's crazy how long I know you now, but like still like knowing the whole story is amazing in itself. What are some of the challenges as a songwriter, as an artist that you face? We have a lot of people of all type of, backgrounds and coming up in the game. A lot of people see the glitz and the glamour of being an artist. The being on the road, the shows, the adulation. But at the same time, there has to be the downside. What are some of the challenges you would say that you face as an artist that you have to really fight through?
There are many challenges, you know what I mean? And there are many advantages as well. But you ask about
Okay,
the
fair.
challenges, in these are per this in these times are the perfect challenges, you know what I mean? Being able to get out there and perform for the people and, you know, entertain and make a living. This is survive, and times like these are very challenging for artists. At the same time, inspiration, coming up with songs that, you feel like will really connect with the people is a challenge, as artists, and then, when you're comfortable and, you find that zen, you just stick with it and beat them over the head with it, work every time, you understand? Yeah, but to be refreshing and to be versatile, and always wanting to bring something different to the table, it requires a lot of meditation. It's a challenge.
And that's crazy you say that, because that's a great segue as well. May is known as Mental Health Awareness Month, and all this month, even with the different interviews I'm doing, I always want to make sure that somehow we are really including, talking about mental health, because it's something that we really, in the Black community, we're getting better with it now with time, but it's something that we really kind of looked upon. You just look at a crazy man and call him crazy, or oh, anxiety, you could deal with that, you know what I'm saying? Or get yourself together and all this kind of stuff, instead of having, concrete and progressive conversation about it. And you just said, just keeping it all together and basically finding inspiration and keeping, finding zen so that you can do the work. So what are some ways that you keep your mental headspace clear and clean so that you can, produce as an artist and stay creative?
Man, I just try to mind my own business.
Hey, that's a big number one.
Mind
That's
my
a
own
big number
business
one.
and the other people way and just don't get in my way to this music. You know what I mean? Yeah, man, but honestly, it's like it could be anything, you know what I mean? Like I just want to just be free. And just want to keep negative energy away, and and just keep people who have the same mindset around, people who want to win, winning attitude you want around, you know what I mean? And people who are always salty and sour and, never jiveful when you jiveful, watch them, and you don't want them energy around. You want people to. You want to, and you don't, that don't mean you want yes man around you, That's, you know what I mean? Having a yes man around you and having people that always never jive is two different things. I mean, cause we don't like yes man. We want a yes man neither. I mean, but It's a joy to know that everybody around hold the same head, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So keeping that space around you, keeping that energy around you, the people around you, keeping that kind of energy
Yes.
clean at all times. Yeah, yeah. For us, in Rastafarianism and all of that, we know that, you know, the cannabis is a big part. It's the healing. We partake in it to clear the mind, to elevate, to, you know what I'm saying, to be introspective. People use it for different reasons, as a medicine. Legalization is something that you've been pushing for a long time. I'm gonna ask this question twofold, because I want to make sure, you know, the people get two sides of it. In the positive light, how do you see, just going back to the Virgin Islands where we're from, how do you see the legalization of cannabis benefiting the Virgin Islands? And talk about recreational maybe versus medicinal, how you feel like it could affect the Virgin Islands in that kind of way.
I think it will affect only in positive ways. I see no negative coming from this marijuana industry. You know what I mean? None whatsoever. The only thing negative can come out of it is envy and greed. You know what I mean? But as far as healing, as far as elevating the place economically, stimulating the economy and all these things, the marijuana is a perfect solution. I mean, and it's a healing product that could be used for many different.
Many.
If you're
many,
against
a plethora
smoking,
of ways, yeah.
I am with you on that. You know what I mean?
I can understand. I see, you know.
Some people believe that smoking is just not good.
Right, just general smoking, no matter what you're smoking, putting smoke in your lungs is bad.
The reason marijuana smoke is healing and not just any other smoke is that in order for marijuana to heal glaucoma, which is a sickness of the eye, you have to smoke the marijuana so that your eyes can get red. And it will heal the marijuana. So these things, and the ganja smoke is something that reverse certain sicknesses, you know. That's what I'm saying. But you can't just depend on the marijuana alone. You have to use other herbs as well.
Right.
But you can use the marijuana herb for many different things. You just have to break down the herb. Some people may use it in a butter farm. Some people, you know what I mean?
Make a
to
tea
be,
with
to
it.
To be intaking.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it is good on top of good on top of good that marijuana will bring to the place, you know. Even if the government want to tax it, just give them the money, go with the and just make we all just live happy and smoke marijuana, and everybody can be, you know, can be healed. And who don't want it, me don't. I don't like smelling cigarettes. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that's preference. You know.
Yeah.
But I see no nutrition coming from cigarettes, and I have never seen.
Right.
Anybody that would advocate for legalization of cigarette, you know, there's nobody chanting for the legalization of drugs. Nobody's doing that because we know what it does to it. So why are we chanting for legalization? Why is the world holding hands and saying there is something about this plant? You know what I mean? That means, you know, we have to just go with it because Jah make it, you know, and me make it, you know.
Jah
make plant. Every plant
has a
purpose, you know.
And the whole thing is about how you use it. At the end of the day, anything could be abused, right? You know, you could drink too much water at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, it's about temperance and it's about making sure that you're using it to better yourself in whatever way. And at the end of the day, everything ain't for everybody. You know, there's some people who have addictive personalities. You know, I might be able to eat some sugar today, some candy, in a small increment, and somebody else might eat it,
that doesn't
a
mean
bunch
you
of
must
it, and
fight
get diabetes.
It, you know?
Right. Right.
We people have a problem by fighting against things that we don't have no knowledge of. We have no knowledge of a lot of things, but because they are unknown to us.
Yeah. And we just fight it.
Those are the things that baffle my mind too, and where my mind is more time, because listen to this. We say we love God, but we never see God face, you know. And we just see our brethren them every day and don't love and respect them and give them the thing and the honor they deserve. And we love somebody that we never see. Wow.
Never see. And the same God telling us to love our neighbor and love our brother like we love ourselves. So the thing is, for people to, like, you know, preach at that level, look, you know, I love God and not even love their fellow man, ain't godly in itself. You know what I'm saying? So, and Jah looking at that like that ain't right. So it's levels. You have to make sure that you ain't just going for the home run, the singles, the doubles, the triples, they count as well. And when I say that, I mean in life, the thing that seems small and not as important or as big of a deal is the things that we really should care about. You know what I'm saying? So nah, that's you. Well, that would be a whole other podcast on that. Man, I ain't gonna hold you too much longer. We're so glad once again that we had Pressure Bus Pipe on the show today, man. The Flying Intellectual Podcast. It's an honor and a privilege. Plug whatever you have going on, big bro. You know, the newest album, yes, Rebel With A Cause, is doing pretty well.
Rebel With A Cause is out on all musical platforms and digital right now. It's really bubbling. It's been picking up all over the world, Africa, Europe. You know, everybody has been talking about songs from the album. We just released the latest video, King Selassie First. Check that out on YouTube, yes, you know, and I'm getting ready to release another album. One gonna be mad.
Okay.
This one gonna be
okay,
mad.
Okay.
Produced hearing by it here Legions, Masai, you know, it's going to be crazy, yes, crazy, crazy. Remember, I tell you.
Remember, you're hearing it here first on the Flying Intellectual Podcast. The big boss, Pressure Bus Pipe. Thank you so much, big bro, for stopping in, man. Hopefully the youth got something, a gem, and really and truly, the whole thing that I heard today was never give up. No matter who don't believe or whatnot, make sure you stick to it. Don't let the little bumps in the road take you off your journey. You know what I'm saying? Believe in Jah and believe in yourself. Facts. And the rest big will take care of itself.
Yeah,
big up, bro. Much love, man. Until next time. Yes, I bless. Yo, man. Thanks for tuning into my podcast. Please don't forget to review, rate, and share. That would help me out a lot. And it helps get the platform bigger and better. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's @FlyYoungIntellectual. @FlyYoungIntellectual. Hit me on Twitter, @MisterMister_FYI. Connect with me, man. 2020, we're doing bigger and better things. If you really like the platform, tell somebody about it, man. Until next time, peace.